Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock on a chilly but bright Tuesday in the London area, and apparently it's quite cold in Dumbo. I'll let my guest explain what the heck Dumbo is. And my guest this week, I'm really pleased to say, is Rosie von Lila, who I cannot possibly describe other than to say I love her to bits. And as somebody who is referred to by many of his friends as Tigger, because of the amount of energy I have, the first person who introduced me to Rosie said, "This is Rosie. She's a force of nature." And I think Chip Connolly captured that very, very well. So hi to Brooklyn. And how are you, Rosie?
I'm doing great. Hello back. And Dumbo is a neighborhood in New York City. It's in Brooklyn on the water. It's a very old industrial neighborhood that has become the gentrified and the most photographed place in New York City. It stands for Down Under Manhattan Bridge Overpass. It's right where the Brooklyn Bridge and the Manhattan Bridge meet.
Yeah. And I was just saying to you before we came online that I stayed in your apartment one time. You kindly let me use it when you were supposed to be there, but you weren't. And I spent 2 days there with my noise-canceling headphones over my ears, including while I slept, because you didn't have the double glazing in yet. So it was 90 decibels inside.
You should have heard the air conditioner when I first moved in. That thing was even louder.
Sorry, what?
Exactly.
So you and I normally talk quite a lot, but we haven't of late because you've had a lot of things going on. So the theme which I plagiarized remorselessly from events you were running was what comes now, right? So I just did what comes next. You graciously allowed me to steal. Yeah, what's going on? What's happening with you? And then what comes next?
Let's see. The last year has been a big period. It's been a renaissance in my life, is what I'll say. Mm-hmm. I have been giving birth to creative projects, and it's been really interesting to come into a place of making sense of the wide variety of experiences that I have in my career and in my personal life. And it's now in this year all coming together in this beautiful nexus. In September last year, I tried the Whole 30 food protocol for 30 days. And it's meant to be a reset and a way to transform your relationship with food. And I was inspired to do that after 6 solid months of COVID eating. I was eating Ben and Jerry's ice cream every single day, and not just like a little bit, like a pint a day, and baking sourdough bread every other day, and like eating so many grilled cheese sandwiches, and it was delicious and delightful. But by the middle of the year, I was feeling horrible and had no energy, and I just wanted to sleep all the time. And so I said to my honey, I said, let's do a reset. So we tried this Whole 30 thing, and it was fabulous. We finished, and it was strange getting to like day 28, because I was like, man, I feel so good. I don't want to go off of this. What's going to happen when we go off of this? And so we kept going a little bit longer and like transitioned off of it. And I remember when I started eating sugar again, life suddenly felt very ordinary again. It went from feeling amazing at the end of this food program to ordinary. And so that had me keep an interest in it. And then a friend got diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, and she wanted to try it. And so I said that I would support her in doing that. So I was never anticipating doing it a second time so quickly, but I did it again a month later with her. And I remember going into that being like, man, I wish I could invite some other people into this because it's so cool. But I didn't want to, I wanted to keep that time just for her and be with her. Incidentally, at the same time I started that second Whole 30, this was like in November, a friend invited me to do a 30-day challenge of this practice called the Miracle Morning, which incorporates 6 practices. So there's a guy named Hal Elrod. He created the Miracle Morning. And what he did was he researched what are the commonalities between the most accomplished people in the world? And what he found was that the majority of them have very strong morning routines. And so he narrowed it down to what are the six most popular and common. And so it's a practice of having silence in the morning and having silence, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and then writing. And so I combined that with the Whole 30. And by the time I hit the week 3 and 4, I was like, this is profoundly transformational. And the really neat thing is that when you do the Whole 30 on the second half of it, for most people, it's like, just like I describe it as the creative aperture opens, like your aperture for information opens. And so I finished that and I said, what if in January and February, I did this for 2 months and I extended that 2 weeks of awesome to 6 weeks? What would I be able to accomplish then? Mm-hmm. And I ended up setting up a program in January that I call the Quantum Leap, where I combine the Whole 30 with Miracle Morning. And I had a group of people register for it, and they did it with me, and they got the results that were promised. And 70% of the people who were in that 30-day group decided to continue on with me and do 60 days. And today's day 59. We're completing tomorrow. And it's been amazing. And I've now been, it's so funny, Tom, because things have switched. So I've been a sugar addict my whole life. I love cookies, and I love ice cream, and I love cake, and I love French bakeries. Like, I'll go to town on a French bakery.
You love costumes, and I think the favorite costume I've ever seen you in was a cupcake.
Miss Cherry Cupcake. That's right. Miss Cherry Cupcake. So I am a foodie.
French bakeries, you were saying.
Yes. I'm a foodie. I love food. And previously on my Whole 30s, I would be like, yeah, I'm looking forward to eating whatever it is again. Like, there's a fantastic bakery here in New York that I love, and they have the best chocolate chip cookies. And I'm like, oh yeah, that'll be good to go get that. But now I'm producing so much in my life, and I feel so great, and my relationship is amazing, that I'm having to justify when I'm going to give myself my free for all weeks. Cause I'm going to lead Quantum Leap again in April. And so I was planning on, okay, in March, I'll take a break. I'll have my heyday with all my sugar. It'll be wonderful. But now that I'm almost to day 60, I'm like, I don't want to break this flow. So I'm like, when am I going to give myself the gift of sugar? And it's going to have to be in the middle of the year, but I'm simultaneously writing a little paper called Sugar Makes You Dumb, which is something that I've learned through this process.
But you could potentially reframe that it's not so much the gift of sugar, but actually you might find that the engine's running so well tuned with clean fuel, yep, that actually it might be good to slow it down once in a while. So it'd be like, go on a sugar thing, not so much for the taste of the perfect cookies from the bakery in New York. Yeah. But actually let me just slow down for a bit, just to feel the contrast.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, to experience the contrast. It's funny.
That's not your norm anymore. Your norm sounds like you've had this transformational relationship. So your norm is to have clarity and creative. What was it you said? Creative aperture. All right. So
yeah, open up the aperture.
But if, you know, I think there's that human nature piece that if everything's always the same, we start taking it for granted. Right. So mm-hmm. It's like, well, my creative aperture is, you know, thinking of old cameras, f/1.8 right now.
Yeah. Right?
So if I go and, you know, eat sugar for a few days and a bit of Ben and Jerry's, then it might close to f/16. And all of a sudden you go back. I was talking to somebody, I mean, a lot of us have been struggling. Me too, but not, you know, I'm very fortunate to a lesser extent than some others. A lot of people have been really struggling under the pressure of everything for the last year. And early in January, somebody who was already doing dry January did a juice cleanse, which, you know, full bore juice cleanse. And they said, I might do it for, I've never done it for 1 or 2 days, but I'll do it for 3 or 4. And I saw them on day 2. And I just went, you seem like super energized. And this is, you know, this is maybe 1,000, 1,200 calories a day, only juices. All right. Yep. And they said, Yeah, it's great. I'm definitely doing 3 days. I might do four, and I think I'll do this every month.
Hmm.
And they, you know, so it's like the, it's for them, it's switched on their energy, and they weren't eating badly. They weren't COVID eating per se, but it just switched on their energy. And it was, and I think it's, I'm self-reflecting a bit because I don't, I mean, I have a reasonably healthy relationship to food and put a few kilos on or pounds for you Americans. You know, over COVID, I'm generally pretty healthy. The thing that does it for me though is exercise. All right. Mm-hmm. So, and I've, as you know, I mean, I've moved out of the center of London now.
Mm-hmm.
I can get on my bike and 5 minutes from my front door, I am in the hills with mm-hmm. a view back towards London. And yesterday I did that and I just had this almost out of body experience going. It's like somebody's plugged me into a charger. You know, so that was my, this is your lunch break, right? To talk to me. And my lunch break yesterday was riding my bike.
That's good.
But, if we swing around a little bit, the question I asked guests to ponder, I remember last week's guest, David, was deeply pondering what comes next and framed a question for himself. But the underlying theme for me is always about leadership, whether it's self leadership, which you're modeling. But, you know, I'm just, you know, waiting around for you to be the president of the United States at some point, you know, because, you know, you could do a good job. And I know you've talked about running for political office and leadership. So leadership's a big thing for you. You're working on a leadership project, with somebody you greatly admired last year. And then there's all kinds of other stuff. So what's been flowing out of that creative aperture? And apart from the fact that what do you do in 2 days time when the current whole 60 stops, what comes next? What comes next for you? And you know, what can you share with us, that might be valuable to the audience?
Sure. So I'm doing two things right now. Number one is I'm building up my work as a speaker. I've been a speaker for a long time, but when I said that, everything that I've done in the past is now coming together at this nexus point. That makes a lot of sense. I'm doing more speaking. I speak on a few different topics. Burning Man is one of them. Finance for non-finance people is one of the other topics. I love to teach. I teach a session called The Fundamentals of Finance and Investing for Non-Finance People. I'm an avid investor. I love investing in the stock market. And then the last one is, and I just recorded this and I'm posting it this week, is a presentation called, this particular presentation is called How I Overcame Racism or How I Quit Racism. And it's a, it's meant to be a provocative title. And what I go into is my journey with my own learning about being an American and having grown up and not had exposure to a lot of Black friends. And I didn't really have that until I moved here to New York. And it was in my late 30s that I really started to learn about the reality of our American history around slavery and the long lasting effects that legislation and policy that are no longer in place, but nonetheless have had a lasting effect. Mm-hmm. And so I speak about that and I speak about my own journey around it. So those are alive for me. And then I'm launching. So when I talk about the aperture being open and I'm not wanting to mess up the creativity that's coming out of me, I am preparing to launch a program called Women's Team. And this was born out of my partner, David. So David, for probably the last 2 years, has been talking about wanting to be on a men's team. And he had previously had that out on the West Coast, but out here he hadn't yet found it. And so he, a couple months ago joined a men's group and he was so excited and I was really, really happy for him. And I talked with him after the first session and I said, how was it? And that experience led him to realize that it was time for him to start the men's team. Hmm. And so he's starting a program called the men's team. Hmm. And I said, you know what would be fun is if I did a parallel one for women. And so we're developing these programs and sometimes they'll meet together and we'll have speakers at the same time. Our programs meet on the same day at the same time separately. But what we're eventually leading to is developing programs for couples. And so, you know, if you're in a partnership, mm-hmm. man can go join men's team, and like we can learn how to be with each other, because men and women are so different. So that's what we're up to, and that's why I'm questioning if I should have my sugar vacation before or wait until June after we finish the program, because it's great. Like the biggest effect of doing the Quantum Leap program has been an elevation of my consciousness and very grounded and very balanced in my emotions. And then on top of that, I have a rockin' morning routine, and it's amazing. I get up at 5 now. The last 2 days I woke up before 5 without my alarm. And it's nice to have get a lot done before noon.
Cool. The program I was kind of referencing was that you did some work with Rianne Eisler last week. And you got me to, you recommended the book Chalice and the Blade. And I'm just observing from a sort of my angle of the prism that what you and David are doing with the men's team and the women's team, and then comparing notes and then looking at doing things for couples is in its own microcosm way very much that work.
Yeah.
Around men and women, masculine, feminine, collaboration, cooperation, alignment. Mm-hmm. That's very cool. The thing that I find, I was saying to somebody just yesterday that I don't believe in luck or chance. I believe in creating space for serendipities. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned finance for non-financial people. And I tend to write a few days ahead on my daily writing. And the one tomorrow talks about, a blog from a guy called Morgan Housel, right? About, and it's really about the mania that we're in with investments. And the reference the example from Joseph Kennedy in 1929, when he was starting to get stock tips, when he was getting a shoe shine, he went, it's time to get out the market.
Yeah.
And it seems like everybody I know who knows that I have some experience around investing and finance is asking me, how do I invest? What do I do? And they go, and then one of the most common questions is, should I invest in Bitcoin? And they go, let me stop you here. You technically cannot invest in Bitcoin. It has no intrinsic value. You can trade and you can speculate.
Mm-hmm.
An example I gave is a young professional who I mentor, who's 22, is earning well and wants to start saving and building investments. And I said, okay, how much are you going to invest this year? It's quite a lot of money. And I said, take 10% of that, but put in 90% of your time. And I want you to spread that 10% over 12 months and put, buy shares in one company each year, each month. And you have to research that company, because when you buy a share, you're buying part of a company. And you have to commit to not sell any of them for 12 months. You have to have the intention of holding them for at least 10 years.
Wow.
So you're buying, I want you to look at what it takes to actually do research on a company and its current position and long-term potential on the sectors and all of this, and recognize that people giving you a 5-second soundbite, right, are either people who are pumping something up, or they're people who have done 10,000 hours of work on it and are giving you an opinion based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can't tell the difference. So they're going to enter a program, which I will support them on, where I will basically support, coach, mentor them. And by the end of the year, they will own parts of 12 companies. They may only have a few hundred bucks in each one, but they'll actually start to understand the connection of the difference between the market and the companies. So that's my sort of tip for people. But what I was wondering was, and this thing about financial literacy and people not understanding finance and even just their balancing their bank account. Right. And how much money to spend and how to not have expensive debt. But it must be a serendipitous thing. And what I'd love to hear from you is, you know, from what you've done, and you're building a course around this, but what sort of top things do people need to know? You know, what don't people know that they would really benefit from knowing? What's Rosie's top tips on finance for non-financial people?
Number one is developing a relationship with your money.
Okay.
And identifying with it as your money rather than, and your money meaning it's something that you have a responsibility towards in the same way that you care for your family or your pet or your home or your vehicle. You are responsible for taking care of it and nobody else is going to. And when you have a relationship with it, you pay attention to it. And it's not just any kind of relationship. What I say is you want to develop a loving relationship with money. Mm-hmm. And ultimately love your money. Mm-hmm. And that for me was a real transformation in my life because it taught me to have an interest in what was happening with me financially. Mm-hmm. And, the other thing is, the age old wisdom, don't live beyond your means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then experiment with investing. So you can start with, you can open an E-Trade account. There's no minimum. And you can open it with $50 or $100 or $500 and play with that and see and learn how to do trades and do the, they have courses available for free for customers. So you can learn about investing that way and use Investopedia as a resource to learn fundamental things. But my approach to investing when I first started was I would only invest in companies that I'm a customer of.
Hmm.
And those all have done really well. So that was one way that I did my research is, you know, I know from the end user perspective. So I would say that's the place to start, is to start small with experimentation, be willing to, I follow Warren Buffett's rule of never lose money. And rule number one, never lose money. Rule number two, never forget rule number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those are the key things. But yeah, experimenting with it, knowing that you can learn it. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't have experience, you can learn this. It is available to anybody who has the desire.
So from that, and I'm a massive Buffettologist, as I may have told you. But one thing I've never heard I've been following Buffett for 30 plus years. One of the things I've never heard him really talk about is relationship to money for an investor. You and I often talk about, you know, bridging across the Atlantic between American thinking, whether it be on racism and, or whether it be on, in this case, investment. E-Trade is not something in the UK, for example, but Investopedia is. My guest on March the 30th, so 4 weeks from now, is a guy called Tom Nixon, who has a book coming out called Source.
Mm.
And this actually talks a lot about founders, but there's a big, really cool section in the book because he's been working around people's relationship to money, really driven by and acknowledging the work of a guy called Peter Koenig, who is quite significant in this side of the Atlantic on this. So the relationship to money bit, I think, is something not talked about too much. And I, what occurs to me is when I was just thinking of that idea for people to, in the same way as you were saying, experiment with investing. Yes, Buffett would always say invest in something you understand. All right. So, invest in something you understand, you like, you think has legs. Right. And start with things you're familiar with. You know, if you like buying, I was going to say Nando's, but you wouldn't know what that is, but say KFC. If you like buying KFC, buy KFC. But of course you can't because it's part of PepsiCo, right? So anyway, horrible divergence. What I wasn't talking about was the relationship with money, but I'd be interested in your thoughts for a moment around if people started investing, what are some of the things in your experience when you started investing that you felt about the investments? If you, you know, because there is a lot of feeling around investments. Do they go up? Do they go down? How often do you check the price? All that stuff. So when you're experimenting, I think you're also experimenting with your feelings. So what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are it's an emotional game if you let it be.
Mm.
It can be a rules-based game, which is the more effective way to go.
Mm.
So create your rules of when you buy and when you sell. And pay attention to what's going on. So for me, I enjoy speculating on certain stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And like when I started with that first $500, I would see if I could make $25 at a time or $50 at a time. And every time I did that, it built my confidence. And I was like, oh, this is really fun. And, you know, I've had learning lessons along the way too that didn't pan out. Mm-hmm. But I'll say more about that in a minute. What was the question again?
Well, it's really just exploring, you know, what have been your experiences around relationship with money vis-a-vis
emotion
around investing.
Okay. So, you know, for anybody who's new to investing or not familiar with the market goes up and down, but over time it trends upward. And, if you are pinning your emotions on the number in your account every time your positions move up or down, it can be emotionally disheartening. So when it goes down, my mom and I, we love to invest and we talk about stocks all the time, which is something totally new for her. Hmm. And this came as a result of COVID and us deciding to set up having a coffee chat every day of the week. And so during that time, once she started investing, she opened an E-Trade account. Once she started investing, every day we would check the stock market together and talk about what's going on. Some days I would call her and I would say, the market's down. We're hemorrhaging money right now. Don't worry, it's going to come back up. And sure enough, a couple weeks go by and things come back up and then we sell it higher than we bought it. Mm-hmm. One of the lessons that I learned is, there's the age old wisdom that nobody can predict the market. Mm-hmm. But there are people who are full-time traders and full-time analysts. And I subscribed to a newsletter from somebody who's been an analyst for like 25 years. And his stated track record is returning, you know, I think is like 200% annually, which is very, very high. Last year, their performance was 400% return. And, I bought one of the stocks that he recommended. It was the first stock that he recommended in the first newsletter that I got from him, and it was for an electric car company. So I bought a bunch of that. 2 weeks later, and I bought it at the price that he recommended, which was $12 a share. So I bought it at that. 2 weeks later, a class action lawsuit was filed against the company because they had withheld material information from the public. And so their stock price dropped like 40%. And I was like, man, like the lesson there for me was, you know, be careful who you trust and who you listen to, because they're working with the information that they have and they don't necessarily know any better. And I've been, it made me more conservative to take other people's opinions. And looking at my own track record and my own research and what I've been able to accomplish, I've done much better than that experience that I had with that particular position. So, in terms of the emotion, it's easy to get disheartened around that. But what I like to do is if there is a position that I want to exit and it's going to be at a loss, I look for the time at when it's going to be minimize the loss. And I look at where am I going to then move that capital to? What am I going to invest in then that is going to bring me a return that will make up for that loss. And so I do a calculation of how long before I can sell that stock the new stock that I buy and make that money that I lost.
Okay. It's interesting. Everybody has a different perspective on this.
Right.
I'm now at the point where I'm older than you. So I'm building up a pension pot with a financial advisor. Mm-hmm. All the IFAs in this country. And when I signed up with a guy, I said, don't call me unless there's something I need to know for the end of the tax year or something like this, right? Because I'm not very familiar with the UK tax system, having only recently moved here. And he goes, what do you mean? He says, because I've got a lot of friends with financial advisors and they call them with stock tips and this kind of stuff. And I'm going, you need to know I don't look at the markets, right? Because over any period in history, the stock market has outperformed over any 20-year period. Mm-hmm. I don't intend to retire for another 20 years, so I'm just going to let it ride. it's like, now that's not the money. So my interest in money is investing in actual businesses that I can see and touch and feel. And so mm-hmm. I like investing in smaller businesses and then providing my advisory help with them mm-hmm. on a personal level. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is I feel like being a big brother and going, you've not been around long enough to see a real stock market crash. It's like you were in high school the last time there was one. And it says, and it's coming and it's coming hard. So it's interesting. I still have in my US based account a stock that tanked to one cent. Right. In 2000, and it still exists and is going, the business goes along. Right. And I can't trade it because it's too small a price to trade. And so it just sits there. And when I do check that account every year or two, it just reminds me it's still sitting there.
It hasn't been delisted.
It's weird. It's still there. Maybe not a cent, but less than a buck. And it was like $100 at some point, you know.
Oh, man.
So it's a reminder, and it used to sting.
Yeah.
You know, but there's psychology, as you know, in economics around that stuff. Anyway, that's cool. I mean, it's cool. And I'm definitely going to hear about, from Tom Nixon in 4 weeks time. He'll be talking about his book and about Source. And I think about you, around that, because the fundamental piece he's talking about is there's always one person who's at source of any project or initiative. They're not necessarily the CEO or the COO, but they're the person that is kind of, if you will, in my language, the energetic source of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you reasonably well over time. And I think one of the things you're about is being that source. So, plus you also plan and deliver and execute, because we have some mutual friends that are on that whole 60 with you. And I have to tell you, when you're not in the room, you know what they're saying about you? Oh my God, this is brilliant. Rosie's amazing. It's fantastic. It's like, God surprises me not one whit. We could chat for ages, but we should wrap up and honor the time, not go too far over.
Okay.
So with that, last word over to you, Rosie.
Oh, geez.
I always give my guest the last word.
Oh, good. I'm a fan of people picking themselves to be on team success. And I say that when you make that internal choice, whatever your circumstances are around you, and you commit to overcoming the adversity that is around you, that the world opens up and that doors open up. And so I would say, if you're listening to this, to trust in yourself, trust that you are enough, and trust that you've got this, and follow your own unique path.
Cool. And where can people find you?
My website is vonleela.com, and I am very active on Twitter at Rosie Von Leela.
Perfect. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Always a delight.
Bye.